next and last stop is
Atlantic Avenue, Barclays Center.
Stand clear of the closing doors, please.
Boomer and Geo on the Fan. It's a lot of Nets podcast.
I mean, the only Net fans you know? The only what? The only Nets fans you know?
At least they've got some self-aware.
I mean, come on, man. Or are these guys?
Welcome back to the Only Net Fans You Know podcast. I'm Peter. We got a special guest today. He's making his second appearance on the podcast. He's a Nets Twitter Hall of Famer, the host of an OG Nets podcast, and he's fresh off his honeymoon. Big shout out, big welcome to the show, Spence from Fireside Nets. What's going on, brother?
What is happening? Really good to be back, both on the podcast and in the country. Look, we all go through the daily grind. That is life. And sometimes we just got to get away. I literally, for my honeymoon, I went halfway across the world to a place that I didn't even know really existed before a couple months ago in the Maldives. Just had an incredible time. Had a nice little bungalow on top of the ocean. We had a pool, an infinity pool in our back porch area, and that was on top of the ocean, so I can go from the pool to the ocean. And the craziest thing about the trip, Peter, is that I wasn't able to watch the Nets games, but I was able to keep track of scores and stuff. However, given the time difference, tip-off was at like 4:30 a.m. So there were a few nights where I could not sleep. It'd be like 3 o'clock, 3:30, and then I'd see like Nets tipping off in half an hour, and I'd be like, "Oh, well, I can't sleep, but at least I can, you know, check the net score and see my guy Dinwiddie and Mikal Bridges and Nick Claxton all kill it together." So, it was a nice trip. I'm definitely energized. I definitely am happy to be back, but really excited to be back on the show and talk some Nets hoops.
I wish Charlie was here for this actually, but I'm extremely excited to announce this is our first episode as a member of the Off the Ball Network. We're going to be growing the podcast. We're going to be working on content for you guys. Overall, we got some stuff coming in the pipeline. We'll talk about that in a couple episodes. State of the Nets. We're going to do a quick season recap. The Nets finished 45-37. They are the sixth seed. You had a team that was at one point the second seed. As early as, I think, January 1st, a team that was second in field goal percentage, second in three-point shooting. All of a sudden, the trades happen. They go 11-13 since the All-Star break. That takes you from being the second team in the NBA, the second-best shooting, to the worst. Three-point shooting, they go from second to 20th. Is there a bright side to all of this from all the way back to Nash getting fired, to the Kyrie suspension, to Kyrie going to Dallas, KD to the Suns? Are there any positives?
Yeah, I mean, I think the positive is that a lot less is unknown now, as opposed to when Kyrie and KD were here. It was always great when it was working. It was working such a small amount of the time. You weren't sure if these guys wanted to stay in Brooklyn, if these guys were happy in Brooklyn. Obviously, even how it ended, like, that was the only ending that could have possibly happened, right? That would have been great for this team to win a championship with KD and Kyrie, but just given everything, you know, in the 4 year span they were here, hindsight's 20/20. We can see that there were always going to be these problems and always be these issues. So the bright side of you know, KD being in Phoenix and Kyrie being in Dallas is now we have a lot of interesting pieces that aren't necessarily superstars, but are good enough players that you can build a really competitive roster around. Mikal Bridges looks like someone who can be a superstar, and he has become, you know, Brooklyn's prodigal son extremely fast. Dinwiddie's played some of the best basketball of his career. If you look at his assist numbers with the Brooklyn Nets, he's assisting more than 9 assists a game, and that's like really high over what he's averaged in his career. Claxton's having a career year. and Cam Johnson. There looks like there can be some serious potential there. And he looks like he can have a decent ceiling as well. So there's a lot to be excited if you're a Brooklyn Nets fan. I think, yeah, like, you don't have otherworldly talents anymore, but you also, we haven't had to worry about, like, guys being happy over the last few weeks or the future of Mikal Bridges or some of these young guys. And I think the only person that might be unhappy about Brooklyn Nets right now is Cam Thomas. He doesn't play. And when he does play, he scores 40-plus points.
That's some very good points. Also, a couple of things I want to throw in there. Of course, you had the development of when he plays Cam Thomas, the development of De'Ron Sharp. I feel like the franchise is kind of going in a direction, a change in direction, but at least now the picture is getting a little bit more clear as time goes on. After the trades went down, we weren't sure if this team even had a direction. I think things are starting to slightly clear up just a little bit.
Welcome to round one of the Eastern Conference playoffs. The Brooklyn Nets venture down Route 95 to Philadelphia for a date with the 76ers.
Taking on the Nets are the third-seeded Philadelphia 76ers. They won 54-28, finishing the year first in three-point percentage, sixth in field goal shooting, and on defense, they allowed the third fewest points per game while being a top-five team defending the three. Joel Embiid and James Harden are their main weapons. Embiid just had an MVP season, putting up 33 points per game, shooting 54% from the field and 33% from three. Harden put up 21 points per game, 38% from three, and 10 assists. Shooting guard Tyrone Maxey is a third option. He averaged 20 points per game and shot 43% from three. Tobias Harris and P.J. Tucker round up the starting lineup. P.J. Tucker being more of the all-defensive guy, probably going to be covering Bridges or whoever's hot. The Sixers also have a very good shooting bench. They have Shake Milton putting up 37% from three. Niang shoots 40% from three. DeAndre Melton shoots 39% from three. And then you got big-time rebounder and net killer Montrezl Harrell and Paul Reed, who put up two double-doubles against the Nets. Overall, not a great matchup.
Definitely not overly confident in this series. However, I do think we're able to give them a fight. I look at the game that we played against them. I believe it was February 11th. It was the first game of Mikal Bridges' tenure with the Brooklyn Nets. He had 23 points in 34 minutes. Cam Johnson had 12 points, 7 rebounds in 28 minutes. But the Nets played the Sixers very close in this game. Mikal Bridges had a layup towards the end of the game to, I think, either take the lead or tie it. I think it was actually, to take the lead by one. He missed it. It was a bunny. James Harden hit some really big shots down the stretch in this game. He had 29 points. Embiid had 37. But I look at that game and say, okay, the Sixers won by 3 points. That was the first time we saw the new look Nets as a unit. You can't look at this matchup and tell me, with the way Dinwiddie's been passing the ball, with the way Bridges has been scoring the ball, when the Nets are on from three-point land, they have a lot of guys on this team, Dorian Finney-Smith, Cam Johnson, Royce O'Neal, Joe Harris, Seth Curry, all these guys can get hot from three. And you know Seth Curry's always got a little bit of ammo playing his former teams, usually puts on against Philadelphia. I think in that game, he had... I don't think he played in this game. But normally he puts on against his old teams. I can see the Nets really being competitive in this series. I think that Embiid's going to get his. Can you slow down the rest of this unit? Can you make Maxey into an okay player? Can you slow down James Harden? I can see the Nets, if they're going to win this series, winning it in 6 or 7 games. I'm not overly confident in that pick. But if you ask me, hey, Spencer, what's your feeling right now? Give me the Nets in 6.
Yeah, and this is kind of a very unique situation. Obviously, with the Harden thing, obviously with the Nets lineup, they like to play small ball. You're going up against Embiid. The teams played each other 4 times. The Nets lost all 4, but very weird in different circumstances. First time they played each other, if you guys remember, that was the game that Ben Simmons came back to Philly. We had KD, Kyrie, and they lost I don't know how they lost, but they lost in embarrassing fashion to the 76ers that did not have Embiid or Harden playing. That was a disaster. You have another game, the last game of the season, where pretty much all the backups just played. You know, that really, from post-trade, you've only had that one game that you mentioned, and that was, well, like their first game together. And it was a competitive game. And if you remember, Spencer Dinwiddie just missed hitting that game-tying three.
Yes, well, he made it. It wasn't in time.
Yeah. They know what I'm talking about. It's just very interesting how you can go about this series. And I think you made a very, very big point. Embiid is going to get his, and you kind of have to slow down everybody else. I just, like, who's going to be on Harden? Who's going to cover Maxey? What would you do?
I would put Mikal Bridges on, I guess, Harden. Oh, right, yeah, because then you'd put Dinwiddie on Maxey. Dinwiddie's going to have to cover Tyrese Maxey. Actually, swap that. I'm gonna say put Dinwiddie on Harden, and I say that because Harden is not as quick as Maxey. Harden's a little bit more crafty at this stage in his career. He's going to beat you with his head, not as much his speed. So I like that matchup for Dinwiddie, and then I like Bridges, who's probably our best, you know, on-ball defender outside of Claxton or Dorian Finney-Smith. Bridges is phenomenal. Put him on Maxey. I like that as your matchup. And then you have Clax with Embiid, DFS, and Cam Johnson round out the starting lineup for the Sixers, which is Tobias Harris. And who am I missing? Who's that fifth guy?
P.J. Tucker.
Yeah, okay. Leave him open. That's fine. No one's worried about P.J. Tucker hitting shots.
Yeah, it's Philly's very interesting. I was doing like a little breakdown of their team, and they love taking like above the break threes. They lead the NBA in above the break threes. They're shooting at 38%. I was looking at a couple of these players' numbers. Very, very interesting. James Harden took 392 above the break threes. Any corner threes? Like, I think it was under 20 each. You have Harris, Tobias Harris, 188 above the break threes, 37%. Melton, 39% from above the break threes. The Nets have to really, really clamp down on the three-point line. I think that's going to be the key to the series. The Nets are going to have to score from the three-point line, which unfortunately Philadelphia really defends well. And the Nets are going to have to find a way to cut down these guys. I could see Embiid getting 30 points easy each game. I don't know if the Nets could pull this out, but I definitely think that there is something to our defense having a chance in this series.
I totally get, you know, the main concept of the Nets losing the series, because on paper the Sixers are a better team. They've played better than the Nets for the majority of the year, and they've been relatively a cohesive unit in the sense that, yeah, they made some moves, but they've had the same core throughout the season, whereas, you know, this Nets team is still relatively new. I think that February 11th game, like I said, was their first game together. So I totally get everyone, and especially Nets fans, thinking, hey, they're the 6 seed. They're the 3 seed. They're going to beat us. 5, 6, 7, let's make it competitive. But, Peter, there's a novelty in the storyline of some of these matchups and thinking, okay, well, who is this game personal for? All right, let me think. When James Harden was a Net, who were some of his teammates that he decided to leave for Philadelphia? Joe Harris, Nick Claxton, Seth Curry. Three guys, right? That James Harden literally looked at the team and said, I don't want to play with you. I want to go to Philadelphia and play with Joel Embiid and play with Tyrese Maxey and play with some of these guys that I think are better basketball players than you. I'm Nick Claxton. If I'm Joe Harris, if I'm Seth Curry, I'm taking that shit personally. Let's move down the list. All right, Dinwiddie. We'll get into his stuff later, but he's got some motivation to play really well in this series. I think you're going to see an angry, passionate Dinwiddie who wants nothing more than to prove he can be the second best player for a playoff team like the Brooklyn Nets, right? Last season for Dallas, he was your third best guy behind Luka and Doncic. So it's going to be personal for Dinwiddie. Cam Johnson, let me think about it. I'll find one. Mikal Bridges. Mikal Bridges should have been a Philadelphia 76er. This is a guy who is a diehard 76er fan, played at Nova, wins a championship there, and gets passed on by the 76ers. I'm sorry. No, they drafted him, and then they traded him. They traded him to, again, Phoenix, right?
Phoenix, yep.
Or, and what was the return?
Oh, man. Was it Zaire Smith or something?
Might have been Zaire Smith. It might have been something like that. So that's motivation for Mikal Bridges right there, right? Like, all of a sudden, now here's the team that passed on you. You're the number one option for this Brooklyn Nets team. You almost beat them last game when it was your first game as a Net. I just think there's a lot of personal motivations for the Nets. And let's face it, if you're the 76ers, what's your motivation? Embiid's probably going to win the MVP. So, cool. He gets that. James Harden has literally watched the Nets crumble since he's left. So James Harden can say, hey, told you so. Like, they don't have, yeah, they want to win. They want to win a championship, but they don't have the same inspiration and I overall drive that I see a lot of these Nets players do to win this series. So I think a lot of people are overlooking that part of it. Like, yeah, from a talent perspective, on paper, 76ers all day. But you don't play basketball on paper, Peter. You play it on the hardwood. I think the Nets are going to be more than ready to give the 76ers everything they can handle in this series.
I agree with that. I will give you a little pushback on the motivation thing. I'm sure the 76ers want to win, and you've said that. But I think what you're missing is the pressure. There's no pressure on the Nets. The Nets are not supposed to be here, right? The Nets are not supposed to be here. They're supposed to be out of the playoffs after KD left, and the 76ers are supposed to be in the NBA Finals. And the Nets are not an opponent that they could just look over. It's going to be very interesting if you get this into a game five or a game six, when anything could happen, right? I think there has to be, a script for the Nets to follow. I mentioned before the three-point shooting. Philadelphia has to be kept away from the free throw line. We have to figure that. I don't know how they could do it. But we gotta stop that from happening. They're fifth in the NBA in free throws. Embiid, Harden, we know them. They're gonna go and draw fouls. They're gonna flop, right? We know this already. If there's a script that you could write out, what would the script be for the Nets winning?
It's pretty simple. It's the guys who have been inconsistent have to step up and hit shots. Talking about Cam Johnson. We have seen some really high points in the last few games of the season from Cam Johnson, and we've also seen some really low points where he couldn't hit water if he fell out of a boat from three. He has to step up, and he has to prove to the Nets that he can be that, if not second guy or third guy, he can be like a real scoring threat as a starter. I got to see a little bit more of that from Cam Johnson. We saw it down the stretch, but I got to see it consistently on a nightly basis. Dorian Finney-Smith, same thing. Inconsistency has killed him this season. And when he doesn't play well and he puts up 2-4 points, Nets usually lose on those nights. One of the Nets' bigger wins of the second half was, if you remember this, Peter, they beat up on the Celtics a few weeks ago. Dorian Finney-Smith had around 16, 17 points in that game. So for me, I have faith that Bridges, Dinwiddie, and Claxton are all going to do what they've been doing. Royce O'Neal and Joe Harris are closer to them in terms of they've been very consistent in the second half. Royce has just been a really important player for us off the bench. So for me, it's Dorian Finney-Smith. It's Cam Johnson. It's guys like Seth Curry. If Seth Curry is going to get playing time, they have to step up and hit shots. And if they don't, it's going to be very hard for the Nets to make up, the talent gap between these two teams.
There's been a couple, I don't know if I believe this rumor, I mentioned this to you before, off the podcast. There's a rumor that, I don't know if this is even laughable, Ben Simmons might be coming back. There's a rumor that he might have practiced with the team. Do you think that that's just a troll or a joke? I feel stupid for even mentioning it, but that would be kind of a huge move for the team if that would be real.
There's a place in my town that I live in, and about a year ago, a sign on the storefront came, and it said, coming soon, Tua Pizza. Sign hangs there for about 6-7 months. They don't open. reach out. Hey, are you guys opening? Yeah, opening soon. We don't have a date yet. We'll let you know. It's been a year. It still hasn't opened. I have no idea if it's good or not. That's how I feel about Ben Simmons, which is why I'm just not going to take any news on him until I actually see him on a court and I hear that he looks good. And what's annoying is, like, there were moments throughout the season in the very beginning, we saw these tiny little spurts of, oh, that's Ben Simmons. You know, a few plays, especially early on when he was playing with KD and Kyrie, there were a few moments where we kind of pondered, hey, is he maybe back yet? And then down the stretch, he just wasn't. Like, we can tell on a nightly basis, he just wasn't. He didn't have that same push. Not mentally, I mean physically. Like, he did not have all the physical tools there that he had in Philadelphia when he was dunking on everybody every single possession. Until I actually see him on a court and I hear that, like, he looks good, I'm not going to believe any sort of reports. Just like Tua Pinsa, they're not opening. He's not playing until, you know, I actually physically see the open sign on the store.
Who do you have in this series? What's your final prediction? You can't go back on it.
Nets in six. I'm going to be viewed as a homer. Like, I guess I can go Nets in seven. I think that if you have to play a game seven in Philadelphia, you lose. So what I'm thinking is this, Peter, and I'll go game by game. I think the Nets get off to a really hot start. I think they split in Philadelphia. I think the Nets take game one. I think that they go back to Brooklyn. They play two. I think they split there. I think the series is 2-2. I think the Nets go to Philadelphia and take a pivotal game five. I think that they go back to Brooklyn and they actually close them out in six. I said what they need to do to win. I truly believe that Jacque Vaughn will have these guys ready. Here's my thing. If they upset the 76ers, which I'm picking, I think they lose in the next round to Milwaukee or Boston. Who would they play, by the way, if they win against the Sixers? Would they play Milwaukee or Boston if both teams move on?
Milwaukee.
Okay. So I think they'd get smoked by Milwaukee in the next round. And that's like showing you, like, hey guys, like, I'm a real fan. I'm realistic about my expectations. I don't think that the Nets are going to go on a championship run with this group. Like, I'm not out of my mind, but I do think that we're going to upset Philadelphia. I think that they're overlooking us. I think the city of Philadelphia is overlooking us. And also, how much heartbreak can a New York fan take? I mean, the Eagles absolutely bludgeon the Giants in football. I just don't see that happening twice, even though they're much better than us on paper. Like I've said, give me the Nets. Give me Jacque Vaughn. Give me a team that's hungry. And, I think Nets in six games. That's my pick.
I'm going to it hurts me to say this, and I'll always say this when I pick against the Nets. I pray to God I'm wrong. My mental health would be a lot better if I'm wrong, but I'm going to say Sixers in six. I even might even want to say Sixers in five. I just don't love the matchup. I do agree with you, though. They are going to split one of the first two games, and that's going to be exciting, and they will have a chance in game three to maybe, you know, change my mind.
The other part about this is, you know, Embiid is starting to get that love that Giannis has gotten over the years, that Kawhi has gotten in the past. Like, if any year I've seen the rest of the NBA rally around Joel Embiid and the media members too, people think that Joel Embiid is the best basketball player in the NBA. And most guys have said that. Most people think he should win MVP. I think he's going to win MVP. But I think, like, Embiid's feeling himself a little bit this season, and he's been great. They're not going to lose because of Joel Embiid. He's going to put on. But I think that 76ers kind of think they're hot shit. They think their stuff doesn't stink. And the best sort of opponent to compete with a team like that is a high-energy team, right? A team that doesn't have that superstar player that is overlooked. So, you know, I have a feeling, and I don't want people to think I'm a homer or a biased fan. I normally pick against the Nets in these situations. I don't think I gave, like, after the Celtics jumped off to that start last season, where I don't know if it was game one or two, but the game that Tatum hit the buzzer beater, the layup to win the game, that was game what?
Game one.
Yeah, I said the Nets were done after that. I didn't, you don't lose a game like that and come back and win the series. I don't care who's on your team. So my point being, I'm usually pessimistic. Like, I'm a realistic basketball analyst, if you will, amateur analyst, I guess I'll call myself. But I think too much has been going right for the 76ers this year. I don't think that they've sort of had to deal with a lot of adversity on this squad. And Doc Rivers always chokes. Like I'm going to be real with you. Doc Rivers is not a good playoff coach. Yeah, that's just how I feel.
I think the Doc Rivers thing is a very, very good point, an interesting point. It's going to be a fun series. It's definitely going to be a fun series. And to end the kind of playoff segment, I'm going to give you guys a little story. I don't think I ever told you, Spencer, but a couple years ago, Nets are playing the 76ers. This is the playoffs. This is, you know, the D'Lo Nets, right? My dad is shopping at a big, I don't want to give the name of the store in case Dinwiddie goes there now, but a big time market in downtown Brooklyn. You probably know what I'm talking about already. He sent me a picture of Spencer Dinwiddie shopping, and I'm like, what the fuck is this shit? He goes, I have to talk to him. He goes, Spencer Dinwiddie was on the phone. My dad talks to him. Spencer Dinwiddie gets off the phone. You know, my dad's a little older, so he doesn't know how to work all the camera stuff. Shows my dad how to take a selfie, and he calls me up and just gives the phone to Spencer Dinwiddie. I'm at home just completely shocked. One minute I'm in the bathroom, the next minute I'm talking to Spencer Dinwiddie. This is right in the middle of the playoffs, right?
Yeah.
And talking about how honest this guy is, I say, I think the Nets were down at this point in the series. I said, oh, I didn't know what the fuck. I'll be honest with you. I was fanning out a little bit. I'm like, oh, you know, we got to take down the 76ers, blah, blah, blah. And he's just like, yeah. He didn't seem too confident. Like, he was, you know, he was being nice. He talked on the phone with me for a minute or two. But I got to say, he's my family's, you know, favorite player because of that. But the point of all this is very honest, very, very honest man. And all of a sudden, we see this thing of the tension between him and Kyle Kuzma taking shots at each other. It goes back to last year, or maybe was it maybe even earlier this year? I gotta check myself on that.
It goes back to the Dallas when Dinwiddie was in Dallas, and basically, like, I think Washington had beaten Dallas. And Dinwiddie had a post-game comment about Washington, like, not being serious. Or he basically said, that's a game we should win. And then Kuzma tweeted something. I don't remember Kuzma's initial tweet, but it was at Dinwiddie talking trash. And then Dinwiddie basically recently did an interview. And in the interview, he addresses Kuzma's initial tweet from a few years ago. And he gives his honest opinion about former teammate Kyle Kuzma. Basically that his focus is elsewhere. It's not necessarily always on basketball. He's not the third star on a great team. If he was, otherwise the Lakers would have kept him, which I thought was an amazing line from Dinwiddie. You were saying how honest he is. Like, I love the fact that Dinwiddie keeps it super real. And, you know, most of these guys, it's funny, like the way Pat Bev talks about himself, right? It's the opposite of how Spencer Dinwiddie talks about himself. Pat Bev's like, I'm the greatest defender to ever play the game. I'm top three defense, whatever. Check the stats. I'm this, I'm that. You know, which, granted, if you're in the NBA, like, I'm sure 99.9% of guys tell themselves, like, I'm the best. Maybe I'm not getting the time. Maybe it's the wrong fit. But, like, these guys have to be so confident in their abilities. Not that Dinwiddie's not confident, but Dinwiddie will look at a team. He'll be like, yeah, I'm not the best player on the Brooklyn Nets right now. If you hear the quote, he goes, Mikhail's like our number one. He said, I can be a number two on a really good playoff team. I can be the number three on a championship team, which I kind of agree with. Like, he was the third guy in Dallas. They were, you know, a few, like a player or two, a decent player or two away from competing against the Warriors in that series. But that wasn't, you know, Dinwiddie wasn't the problem in that series. Dinwiddie put on as the third guy. I think Jalen Brunson struggled a little bit in that series, and the rest of the Mavs did as well. But my point is, like, Dinwiddie could say, hey, I can be the number one on a championship team. It wouldn't be true. But like you would think maybe he would speak like that. And he's very open and honest, not just about other guys in the league, but about his place and where he stands as well. Like, I'm pretty sure when they made the trades and stuff, he was like, yeah, like, I'm not mad that I'm back here. I mean, I thought I was clicking with Dallas, but it's Kyrie Irving. Like, you know, not for nothing, he's one of the greats. Like, I'm good, but I'm not there. So I loved what he said about Kuzma. I thought it was great. Kuzma comes back with a ton of spicy tweets that, you know what, Peter, I want you to go through those tweets because I have a response for every single tweet that Kyle Kuzma had. I know Dinwiddie isn't going to go back at him because he's too classy. He's not going to go to Twitter. That's not where Dinwiddie fights his battles. But I have a response to every single one of Kuzma's tweets about Dinwiddie when you're ready.
He says, the Wizards and I have so much real estate on Din Shitty Island. This guy is signed by a team, $60 million, and was traded before the following season was over.
Oh, yeah. So that's let's start with that first tweet, right? We're going to start right there. And shitty, pretty good. It's a good burn. I'll give him credit. That was creative.
That was pretty funny.
That's pretty good. He got traded to a team that ended up in the Western Conference Finals. So, like, stop it. You know, like, yeah, Washington traded him. They valued Porzingis more than Dinwiddie. And Dinwiddie was not playing great in Washington. I get all that. But he was in the Western Conference Finals last year, Kuzma. You weren't. So cut that, like, see, like, right there, fuck yourself. End of argument. All right, what's the second tweet? Quote. Oh, second tweet quote.
What in the world have you won in this league? LOL, you've been bounced around like a basketball, my boy.
Kuzma's been in the league for 6 years. Dinwiddie's been in the league for 10 years. Kuzma's been on two teams. He's going on his third team. He could easily hit five teams before his 10th season. Kyle Kuzma can. Also, you want to talk about what have you won? Kuzma is the definition of that really good role player who won a championship and thinks he has all autonomy to just talk shit and basically blast anybody who hasn't won a championship. Dude, you were the sixth man on that Lakers championship team. Yeah, you were the third leading scorer, but that was LeBron and Anthony Davis. Like, everybody else, Kentavious Caldwell-Pope, Dwight Howard, Danny Green, there were a ton of guys that were all just part of the mix of Rajon Rondo. Like, Kuzma, your importance wasn't that higher than Dwight Howard's or Rajon Rondo's on that Lakers. Yeah, maybe a little higher than Rondo's, but point being, like, don't act like you were the guy on that team, bro, or the third guy. You were maybe the fourth or fifth dude on that squad. That's my response to number two. What's number three?
Number three, you could thank KD and Kyrie. And the spearheading 34 wins before the All-Star break, 11-13 after the break for your playoffs. Fucking bastard.
Okay, so here's my response to that. You're only there because of Kyrie and KD. It doesn't apply to Dinwiddie, Mikal Bridges, and Nick Claxton. Because those three guys are so responsible for our 11 wins. You know what I'm saying? Like, okay, yeah, if you want to go at Joe Harris and Seth Curry and Dorian Finney-Smith and be like, you're in the playoffs because of KD and Kyrie, okay, fine. I can respect that part of it. But let's not act like Dinwiddie hasn't played out of his mind, really, for the most part, with Brooklyn and Mikal Bridges. These guys are responsible for getting the Nets and securing them that sixth seed. Let's be real. A lot of Nets fans looked at the Nets after the trade and said, oh, we're going to be in that play-in. Might even be a ninth or tenth seed. I don't want to hear that you're there because of KD and Kyrie bullshit. Kevin Durant missed a lot of games while he was still with the Nets, mind you. Kyrie Irving missed a few games in the beginning of the season. I just, that narrative that, like, you're only here because of them, it's so lazy. And if you're going to say that to someone who isn't averaging a career high 9 assists. Now, I think in the next tweet, you'll reference it. I think he does reference that Dinwiddie's been hooping. He kind of gives him a backwards hand compliment. All right, what's the third tweet?
Right now we're up to number four. This is the fourth one. Second option, more like second point guard. LOL, my man. I watched out for you 2 months at the end of your Wizards tenure, being the second option, averaging 8-4-4. Sounds good, but glad you're hooping now.
Again, he he gives him a backhand compliment right there, right? He says, glad you're hooping now. Like, clearly acknowledging that Dinwiddie's been hooping for the Nets. Obviously, it didn't work out in Washington. But since that trade, Dinwiddie's been really playing well. First for the Mavericks, now for the Nets. I think we have to turn our glance to Washington. I think, all right, maybe it was more of the team and not as much Dinwiddie, because clearly Dinwiddie is a player in this league. He's proved it now in three different occasions. First with Brooklyn, then with Dallas, now again with Brooklyn. I haven't seen Washington in the playoffs or be competitive in the playoffs since John Wall was there. So I just like, and also Dinwiddie's two teams that he's played with since the Wizards have made the playoffs. So I look at that quote and I'm like, all right, man, like maybe he wasn't that dude in Washington, but he's been that dude relatively everywhere else he's been in the past few seasons. So maybe it's Washington and not Dinwiddie.
Number five, he goes, and yup, I got a bag coming. Stop hating. LOL.
I hope Kyle Kuzma's bag is filled with cockroaches and cheese.
All right, number six. And he says, and last and not least, number six. The only way you'll ever be worth your contract is if the NBA finally gives you your wish of being paid in crypto. Checks the markets. Enjoy the clicks. Go Sixers. I'm personally offended by the Go Sixers part, by the way. Just throwing that out there.
I mean, like, lame crypto joke, but also, LOL. That was pretty good. If you're going to go shit on Dinwiddie, I think, like, you almost have to make a crypto joke.
I don't know. I didn't like Kyle Kuzma before. Still don't like him. Probably will never like him now after this. As far as, you know, this beef goes, I'm on Team Spencer Dinwiddie by far. I think that's fair to say.
Me too, for sure. And listen, to bring this full circle, it's kind of funny this is happening right before the playoffs, right? Like, I don't think that Dinwiddie is a guy who needs extra motivation, but hey, man, like, Kuzma just called you out in front of the entire NBA world. You have a chance to shut him up come Saturday at 1 p.m. EST. So, you know, it's funny because, like Dinwiddie went on a show. I think it was a DraftKings show. His response was very calculated, and you can tell he thought about it. And you can, like, he had really good points to each argument he brought up. And Kuzma is just, you know, going back at him on Twitter. Like, that's kind of lame. I don't know. Go on a show and talk your trash, right? Like go back and forth that way. Don't the whole, like, tough guy Twitter fingers thing. It just doesn't do it for me. As someone who's never really talked shit on Twitter.
All right. So we're going to wrap things up. Let's get some plugs in there for you. Follow us on Twitter at NetFansYouKnow. Check out the YouTube, youtube.com/@NetFansYouKnow. Check out the IG, the only NetFansYouKnow. Go ahead, Spence.
Yeah, for those who don't know who I am and the podcast I host, I host Fireside Nets with Spen and Nick. It's a Brooklyn Nets podcast brought to you by Empire Sports Media. We usually host once a week. I have not put out an episode the last 2 weeks because I was in the Maldives for my honeymoon, as referenced earlier in the podcast. But we should be coming out with some content really soon, probably for the third playoff game. I'm thinking we'll watch games on Saturday and Monday, and we'll give a reaction pod on Monday night to those first two games. But yeah, go follow us on Twitter. Go follow us on Instagram. Fireside Nets is the account. And if you want to follow my personal Twitter account, that's at MrSaw42. My name is Spenny in the Nets, so search either one.
Gotcha. All right, guys. Have a great day. Have a great commute. Have a great night. Enjoy the playoffs. And let's go Nets.
Let's go Nets.
We're out.
James Harden's our Benedict Arnold. Just adding that in there.